Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we're joined by Jonathan Big John Francis, the visionary founder of Shock, a creative consulting firm that breathes new life into brands through customer service transformation, marketing, and innovative design. A strategic advisor at Sincere Spectra and serving on the board of directors for the Economy of Communion, Jonathan is dedicated to revolutionizing organizations with impactful strategies. With an MBA from the University of Roehampton and an advanced diploma in mass communication from the Management Development Institute of Singapore, his expertise spans brand building to animation. Jonathan's passion for storytelling and brand revitalization shines through Shock's work, making brands unforgettable in today's competitive landscape. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and how our brands can navigate successfully into the future. Big John, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing?
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I have to say, you introduced me better than I would do myself.
Pat on the back there. Good job, Daryl. Good job.
Pat. There we go.
How did you even get into the, obviously this is, not everyone falls into this field. An MBA takes dedication, hard work, and effort. With the work you've been doing, obviously, is a result of passion and dedication and commitment. How did you even get started in business? Are your parents entrepreneurs? Is this
for myself? My dad was an entrepreneur many years ago. He was actually an engineer, right? Had a business that was actually repairing ships, vessels. He had that business in Indonesia. But I never wanted to go into business, even though there was always this inkling of it. My family definitely are. The family we have, actually Sincere Spectra is a family business. So we've got three factories, actually four in total now, in Malaysia, and there are plans to expand it into other countries as well. So I think it's always been in it, but it was only recently that I really felt like, you know what, I have to break out. I have to break out of my shell and I have to start something on my own.
I love that. I guess what's been the biggest challenge then in your career? Was it that? Was it like feeling like you need to go do your own thing? Or obviously it's, in some ways it's good for you to have that ecosystem to grow up in and to try and learn new skills and roles, company.
I think it came to a point where I felt like, what, I cannot take orders anymore. I reached a certain point of seniority in my previous company and there are a lot of things that you want to change, you want to do, but you just cannot because you're stuck being an employee, so to speak. So you've always got that someone to report to, even though you might think that someone's wrong in the approach. So it finally came to a point where, you know what, bugger this, right? I'm gonna go on my own. Because if I make those wrong decisions myself, at least I'll learn from it. Because I'm the kind of guy, right, that if you tell me, John, don't cross the road, there are dinosaurs there waiting to eat you alive, I'll be like, really? And I would cross that road just to see if it's true. Yeah. I have to figure it out myself. If I get bitten, then yeah, so be it. But I'm the kind of guy that really needs to learn things the hard way to really get the message across. You can't sit there for an hour and tell me, you know what, these are 10 steps that you need to not fail, right? It doesn't work for me. I've got to fail. I've got to figure that part out myself. So I think that's the exciting part about being on your own, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. They say once you work for yourself, you inherit the worst boss ever. They accept all your excuses. They let you show up to work late. They let you cut corners. But through that process, I believe, is a personal development journey that is unparalleled. Because even when you think about personal finance, most people that work for a company, they're trying to manage their own finances.
Right.
But when you have your own company and you have staff, you have to manage your own personal finances. You have to manage the business's finances. And often the staff will come to you with their financial problems. They need an advance on the pay. And now you're coaching. I just had a team meeting before this and we were literally going through the fundamentals of the book from of Richest Man in Babylon. And I've given it to all the staff and we're talking about this stuff. Like you guys need to be, because it's going to happen. Two of my staff members have family in the hospital. You got to prepare for a rainy day. Dwelling a profitable investment. These are fundamentals. And so I think that personal development journey, it's powerful. I understand your craving for that. So what has been the biggest contrast for you working in a bigger company versus now venturing off on your own?
The conversations I had with my friend this morning, right? She's a doctor. She's a medical doctor. not the BS doctors, as I call them. Also, she just left the hospital that she was working at, and now she's on her own. She's going to be part of a clinic, and she's going to be part of all these things. And same for me, right? We leave the comforts, right, of being employed, right? You leave the comforts of having, I've got this much in income, and now it's nothing, right? So I'm on my own. And I think the big difference is that you're awake, right? Your mind is constantly working 24/7 a day. I've woken up throughout the night 3 or 4 times. I'd wake up and I'd suddenly have an idea about something, and that feeling that, oh, maybe I don't need that sleep right now, and I got to go to my laptop and just work out this idea before I forget about it. So it's difficult. That's why they say for founders, right? It's the same for you. I'm sure the business is you, and you are the business. It's synonymous. It's one entity. You can't remove yourself from it ever. And I told myself, I said, I have to, because I get burnt out, but I just cannot. And I think that's the difference between being passionate and doing things on your own rather than working for someone else. Because if you're working for someone else, you know, unless you're going to get paid the correct amount of money, I tell my boss, you know what? You're not paying me nearly enough for you to do thinking in the middle of the night. So I'm only going to think until this much. But right now that I'm on my own, I know that if I'm not doing the thinking, no one's doing it for me, right? Mm-hmm. So I've got to depend on myself. And I think that's the biggest difference. And of course, the energy, the passion, it comes across much stronger because it's yours. And of course, you don't want it to fail. So I think that's the fundamental difference. And I think and I feel that if you don't have the same passion, if you don't have this kind of undying passion, but good, whether it's good or bad for your health, that's another thing altogether. But I think if you don't have this, I'm ready to go. If you don't have that, then it's very difficult to be a founder. Very difficult.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Behind every success is someone working like a madman behind the scenes, fanning the flames. For every firestorm business success, there's a madman or woman behind the scenes working like crazy to fan the flames. And that's really true. That's really true. So what would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out and struggling? Like, it's okay to have passion. How do you channel it? How do you turn that into dollars in the bank account, new customer, you juggle lead gen, marketing, sales?
I shared this with someone as well. It's the same thing I told myself, that now that you're in this mode of being the founder, it's going to be so difficult for you to compartmentalize what you're thinking. Your brain is moving so fast all the time, and you could have 10 things on your lap, and you're like, you know what? I'll do 20% here, 20% there, 20% on this thing, and 20% on that. But at the end of the day, you'd have 80% of nothing done for every single thing, right? That really sucks. What I had to try to pull myself back to do is to really finish the important tasks first. You really have to do, no matter how much your brain is not allowing you to do that, you've got to force yourself to finish what is at hand, because these things really do pile up. And the problem with it, and of course, we become founders because, you know, we feel that what we are doing is the right thing, is the best thing. And if you pass it on to anyone else to do, hey, their standard's not going to reach what you expect. So you'd be doing a lot of things on your own, especially at this startup phase. So the most important thing is really compartmentalize what you're doing. Even for the planning, right? You can't think too far. I think to think 5 years ahead, 10 years, there is, please throw that out of the window. That's not going to help you at all.
1 year, 1 month. In the beginning.
And also right now in the current market, you've got to work on your marketing. You've got to work on your content. So even for myself, the next couple of weeks, we are churning out. So my way of doing things right now, and the instruction to the team, is that we are going to be a content. We need to become. We are not yet, but we will have to be a content powerhouse to get any message across. And that's through a book. So right now we've somehow managed to put a book together. That's going to be, I'm trying to release it sometime in the middle of March. It's going to be it's not an academic book. We want it to be a light read, a happy read, a funny read. So that's coming up. We are doing all the TikTok videos, whether it's some comedy, some skits or whatever, but whatever it is to get the message across, right? Content is everything. If you don't have the content, you can have the greatest product in the world, but unfortunately, no one's going to care because no one knows about it. And I was just helping with another client yesterday. They did, wow, a great video. right? And I say, but yeah, the person who's reading the video, the voiceover and the so-called actress in the video presenting the product was so boring. I said, look, it's a 2-minute long video. And I told him 30 seconds in after hearing her voice, I felt like sleeping already. So all this content about is the little nuances in all your content that's going to be important. That's why you might have, for example, you might have two people who are so-called gurus at what they do. One's going to be much more popular than the other because one person's content is much stronger. Or you look better for whatever reason. If you're not handsome, you better be funny. Or the other way around. That's the case. Because my friend was complaining the other day, hey, how come I'm talking about all this personal branding stuff? I think I'm pretty good at it. I give very sound advice. But why is it that this person on LinkedIn gets so much more engagement than I have? And then my first comment to him, of course, I was joking. I said, because you look like shit, right? You don't present yourself in the right way. And that's going to be your problem because personal branding, what is it all about? It's about your image, right? I say, if you don't have that, no one's going to listen to you. So it could be just down to fine points like that. Like I said, great product, but if your marketing is shite, you're not going to get very far with it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's really important. I think that exactly everything, I agree 100% with everything that you said. And I like that you're starting with the book launch. I also want to warn some of the audience because I know sometimes content is an excuse to, and I'm guilty of this as much as anyone, content can be an excuse to shy away from engaging with people and sales. And that's a really important thing because at the end of the day, sales is where the rubber meets the road, but you need leads to sell too. So it's this seesaw.
Exactly.
Content between creating content because not everybody, people buy when they're ready to buy, not when you're ready to sell. And that's, I think, the dichotomy there, I think. So I agree.
Yeah, it might be different in different markets, but what I see happening here in Malaysia and in Singapore, I'm not too sure about what's happening where you're at, but it seems that you've got to have that name first, right? Before someone says, hey, you know what? Let's give this person a shot. And again, this is back to one of my discussions. I'm not going to reveal names here because the last thing I need as a founder right now as a startup is to get someone to sue me. But take for example, I know of this person, right? This person talks about well-being a lot, right? But does this person have any kind of psychology background and everything like this or even gone for any course related to mental well-being? Nada. But person's marketing, great, right? What this person did was to actually basically create the legend of the brand first. The persona is created very strongly and then everyone's, wow, look at all these followers. Look at this. Look at that. That person looks so well put together. Let's give that person a shot. So sometimes depending on what you're selling and what you're doing, this has to be the route. Not saying that it's the right route, but this is the route that quite a few people are taking, creating that master brand, creating that unique brand positioning before they even get lifted off the ground with anything else. And that's what I find so interesting about the market of today because it's so different. So different.
It really still, I think it's almost full circle because back in the day it was a small town and you would do business with people who had reputations that you could trust because it's all about believability and confidence in the result. Businesses solve problems, our markets, more so than demographics and psychographics. So if I have a problem of some sort, I want to go do business with someone that I feel I can trust and is not going to rip me off and is actually going to deliver what I'm looking for. And so this is part of where a lot of people, I think, rely on personal relationships. And that's where you look like Elon Musk has something like 150 million followers. Of course, he owns a platform, but Tesla only has something like 3 million. So personal brands, Oprah, all these big brands, it's the brand. People do business with people. And it's easier to connect with a person than it is with a nameless, faceless entity, if that makes sense. But the offer is really what's going to turn an audience into a buying consumer base.
And that's correct. Unfortunately, that's something that, although you see it happening quite, you think that's the norm right now, but there are still a lot of businesses. Again, I'm talking about Singapore and Malaysia, where a lot of founders are going, you know what, John, Big John, I'm too shy. You're too shy. Then if you can't be the one in front of the camera, then you've better appoint someone who can be, because no one's going to just trust your product without seeing who's behind it. Oh, why is this? Why am I so important? I said, do you not see what's happening in the world? Like what you said, Daryl, right? With Elon Musk and all that. Then after that, the next point would be like, and which I hate hearing a lot, oh, I'm not Elon Musk. I'm not Tesla. We are not like any of the big American companies. We're just a small player. I said, where the hell do you think these companies started from? I said, why do you keep having this? Why do you keep looking down on yourself and what your product can do? Then what's the point of even starting this in the first place, right, if you don't even have that confidence in your own brand? And I really hate hearing that. And I hear it from so many business owners here. And I get really worked up and then I'll tell them off. And then they'll go, wow, John, I've never had a sales pitch involving telling off at the same time. I say, but yeah, that's the whole point. If you want to hire me, I'm gonna call it as it is, because if it's stupid, it's a stupid thought. I'll tell you it's a stupid thought. But you cannot expect to grow if you keep behaving like this. Then what about the brands like Samsung and Honda? Are they not Asian brands too? Why do you always compare yourself to the West and not feel that you can do it properly? You're on your own. That's ridiculous.
Well, you got to focus on what you're doing and do it excellent. Like, our markets are unknown and unknowable. How many people are shopping for a car today? You can look at keyword search and things like that, but ultimately it's unknown and unknowable and it fluctuates constantly. But everyone can acknowledge, exactly, if the goal is to have, and again, it comes down to what's the problem. If the goal is to have, if you're like a teenage kid and you need a car that looks cool, you can drive around and impress your friends, but it's affordable, that's a different problem than if you're a father of a family of four kids and you're doing road trips and you need something that's reliable and good on gas. So what's the problem that you're trying to fix? And if you can be the most excellent at solving that, then it's a double-edged sword. I forget who said it, but I had someone talk about how the more excellent your product is, the less marketing you have to do, because the more marketing your customers will do for you. Whereas the worse your product is, and this is in comparison to what's available worldwide, right? In the marketplace, because some things are so revolutionary and so amazing, and they solve the problems. You look at the original iPod. People were lining up because it was so much better than the Walkmans and so much better than these cassette players and these other things. And so it was just such a phenomenal, it was the most thing that the customers did all the selling. But then you have people that have shoddy products that they slap together that their heart's not in, and it's a Me Too thing. And then they have to do a lot of marketing to sell it.
But you see this... That's also the trouble, right? That I agree with that particular saying, but at the same time, that's already when the product has some sort of attraction. That means you've got a basic traction going and it's so good that the people who are actually using it right now are saying, yeah, that's fantastic. You all guys better get it. But how do you get from that point of zero to this initial so-called the first disciples of the product? How do you get that in? And that's the part that a lot of companies are having trouble to bridge that right now, that starting point, right? The starting point is getting even more difficult now because of whether it's a wrong position, whether it's a slightly inferior product. But I would say that a lot of this has got to do with a positioning thing, because the mentality of people here is that I want to make sure that my product does everything. I say it's impossible. You can't claim 5-6 USPs, yeah, and suck at all of them. There was another company that I did a project for as well. It had something to do with, I'm trying not to give them away. But anyway, they claim that their product dried faster than all other products of the same type, right? And I asked them, I said, so what is it? How did you get that? Do you have all these papers to prove and all that? And they're like, no, we did our own testing. I say, yeah, it's not under a controlled environment, right? So you can't claim to have all these different USPs when they've all not been checked out properly. But that's the problem with the mentality. I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to be everything. The jack of all trades, master or absolutely nothing. And there lies the problem with a lot of businesses here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because if you think, I was really surprised. I heard recently about people were comparing, what do you think is a bigger company? Dropbox is just one function.
Right.
File sharing. HubSpot's a CRM, it's a sales tool, it converts. Which is the bigger company? It's Dropbox. They're a one feature company. But they just do it better than everyone else.
Exactly.
And I think that's a really powerful thing, that if you can just focus on doing one thing really well, do it for free in the beginning if you have to, and then use the results and reviews that you get from people in your marketing to go get the others. And that's People forget that we're in business to serve. We're very focused as business owners on ourselves. I want to make this much money. I want to be able to have work-life balance. I want this. But it's almost like the concept of ikigai. And the ikigai is a Japanese concept of overlapping what you're passionate about, what you're good at, and what people will pay for. And where those three things intersect, that can be your ikigai. That's your purpose, how you fulfill yourself and your contribution to the world. And sometimes people don't know what it is. And it means you got to try, you got to kiss a lot of frogs to figure out where your prince is. If anyone knows that, that's where people have to fall into, is that what are you passionate about? What are you good at? And what are people willing to pay for? Where does that intersect? And then just obsess about doing it better than everyone else. And I think that's a really powerful kind of way to try to move into an unknown future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are the fundamentals of a strong brand? What are the things that you have to have, though? Do you have to have an origin story? Do you have to have a brand address? Do you have to what?
I think the origin story. Now, the problem with that is that a lot of people start to fabricate origin stories, and that's shite. If you don't have an origin story, that's okay. Not every brand has that. I know that some brands, oh yes, their story is that, let's say it's a restaurant, right? Oh yeah, it was my grandmother's recipe and she took it from her grandmother and blah blah blah. Great story, right? Full of family and connectedness and things like that. But I remembered a particular project which I had turned down some time ago, and the company was like, I want you to write for me a brand story. I said, okay, come, let's have an interview. Let me ask you about your story about this brand. Oh yeah, we don't have it. I said, what do you mean? We just decided it was a good idea to do this business because we'll make money from it. So we don't have a brand story and we need you to write one. I said, so you want me to write what, the recipe was brought on a unicorn's back or something? You want me to do that? I said, I'm not into it. I'm not going to recommend that either, because if you get caught up for telling a fake story, that's it. That's the credibility of your brand is completely gone, right? So I'll never work with a company who's telling me to fabricate stuff. So you don't need that brand story, but you need to know, like I say, if you don't have an origin story, that's fine. But if you have what inspired you, that's great. Or you're inspired by, let's say if you're doing it in the tech space, so yeah, I was inspired by Steve Jobs and what he did with Apple, and I was inspired to do this new product in some sense of a homage to Steve Jobs. That one is okay. But at the end of the day, once you have a good product, right, that's the most important bit. And I think, like I said, the careful marketing, that's what you need to do. Because right now, a lot of companies that I speak to, unfortunately, and this happened only in the last 3 weeks, quite a few companies. Oh yes, we've sunk in $500,000, $1 million into our product. And so they tell me this by accident, right? After I ask them, how much money do you have for your marketing? What's your marketing budget? Our marketing budget's really small. We don't have enough money. So I fraud a little bit. Okay, interesting. So tell me how, and somehow they tell me, right? Oh yeah, we've sunk in about, there was one company that sunk in $500,000. Into their product. I said, and you didn't factor in marketing as part of that. Oh yeah, we thought we could do it on our own. I said, what makes you think that? I said, if you go to an engineer for the expertise, you go for every other person for the expertise. I said, would you operate on yourself? No. Then why won't you factor in the marketing budget? I said, now that you don't have one and you are expecting me, and this is a point, and I'm very sure that a lot of founders in my space think the same. So your screw-ups in how you plan for your product, and you factoring in that marketing budget when it's supposed to be really part of what you're supposed to do, because there's no point having a great product if you don't market it properly.
Right.
And I'm not going to foot the bill for your mistake. So I'd rather walk away from this kind of projects. Because what? You can afford to sink in $500,000, but here I am asking for like maybe a 50 grand or, you know, 100 grand for a year-long engagement, and you can't pay that. Then I'm sorry, I'm not going to devalue what I do, because I value my time, I value my team's time. And we know that we do a damn good job at it. So I think that's the big problem with a lot of companies, really. And a lot of startups are also falling into this.
Yeah, it's a catch-22, because people, they say, if you're not a little bit embarrassed by your MVP, your minimum viable product, then you waited too long to launch it. If you're not a little bit embarrassed by it, because you could just be transparent and let people know that this is our minimum viable product, that you don't have to go to market with a polished thing. And that's, what happened to you, this must happen a lot, because I was in a mastermind group years ago, earlier in my career, and we were doing hot seats, and it was this guy's turn in the hot seat, and this is when flash websites were the real, like the big thing, flash, like animations and stuff, but you can't index flash. So they'd spent, like, this company, they'd spent over $500,000, something like $800,000, developing technology to make Flash websites searchable, indexable by search engines. And he's sitting there and he's, now we have to market it and our budget's 50 grand. Everybody in the room, we were all like, bro, you should spend 50 grand on a minimum viable product and $1 million getting people to try it, tell you why it sucks, make it better. Try it, why it sucks, make it better. You should have put a 50K product out there and just built it to fit people's feedback and just giving them big discounts and whatever you had to fit to solve the problem. I think that this is, some of this stuff is so important and so foundational that no marketing is going to finish is fix these issues. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, that's the unfortunate thing that we're still trying to inform people. That's what you need. It's part of, it should be part of your planning, right? You don't go to market without marketing, right?
What are some of the skills and behaviors that you think are important for your staff or other entrepreneurs to improve and develop in today's day and age?
I think for me, it's so cliched that I'm going to say this, but just carry on learning. And I say this because I know of some people who are designers and things like that who can't get a job anymore. Why? Because they are losing out, especially those who belong in my age group, right? Okay, I'm almost turning 40, not quite yet. Those designers in their 40s, late 30s, who have not caught up with the AI tools available. That's giving an example, right? If you don't catch up with that, I'm sorry, you're going to be dead. So it's a constant thing for us, even for myself, that learning is a daily thing. Oh, there's a new thing coming up. Let's go test it out. What could we do with it? How can we play around with it? Even the news as well. People say, yeah, we are creative. We are creative by definition in terms of what we do, but we are also in the business of helping businesses to grow. So that means also being very up to date with what's happening in the world, the economy, and things like that. And that's the expectation I have of people who are with me, who work with me. And I think that's important for any of potential new company founders and things like that. Is the, I think because of how intricately connected things are right now, the failure to learn and understand behaviors also, it's gonna work against you. So yeah, like I say, as cliched as it sounds, the learning, but of course, learning is just not learning for the sake of it, but you've really got to put that learning to good use and not just going, oh yeah, that's a great tool, but oh, okay, yeah, we stop at that, but we don't go and try out the tools ourselves, right? So I think that's important because, and I think one of the bigger things as well is to, even though you founded a company, you're not the smartest person around.
Oh, that's a tough one.
And learn to get, if I can, you can censor this out, but I always tell people, you must have the fortitude to be able to withstand a kick in the balls.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
That's, you have to be willing. We spent 50 grand. I spent 50 grand to hire 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success, all the published studies. And what we were looking for were, what are the commonalities, almost like a Venn diagram. If we overlapped all the studies from over 100 years on small and medium-sized businesses and their success, what are the common denominators? And we uncovered 8 critical success factors. There's self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skill, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. Those are the big umbrellas. And then we drilled into each of the sub factors, like each of the, so self-efficacy, what is self-efficacy? What does that mean? And we looked at all the studies on specifically entrepreneurial self-efficacy. Studies like, I won't read them all out, but emotional intelligence, a meta-analysis, investigation of predictive validity. That one's still complicated. But we looked at all these different studies, personality aspects of entrepreneurship, a look at 5 meta-analyses, success factors of small and medium-sized enterprises. Let's put the person back into entrepreneurship research, a meta-analysis on the relationship between business owners, personality traits, business creation, and success. So we looked at these things, and what did we come up with? Came up with 3 pillars of self-efficacy. One is personality traits, characteristics, leadership skills, and personal disciplines. So the personal disciplines are things like physical health, sleep, diet, fitness, mental health, time management, a commitment to improve, right? Sense of discipline and urgency. But then leadership, what is leadership? For us in our research, leadership was defined as self-awareness skills, communication, cooperation skills, emotional intelligence skills, and adaptability. And then what were the personality traits, the characteristics? It was locus of control, which means being a control freak about the things you can control. Extroversion, like you have to be willing to go meet new people, right? Every business needs regulars or regular subscribers to hold, but you still have to go meet new people. If you don't grow your customer base, the only thing you can do is shrink. And then you have to have an openness to experience. Like you mentioned, you have to stay on top of what's new. You have to be agreeable and conscientious, and you have to be accepting of criticism and feedback. Otherwise, you're going to run yourself into a ditch. You're going to hit an obstacle and you're not going to pivot.
Exactly.
So just in terms of exactly what you're saying, being able to wake up and get kicked in the balls, which is so much more elegant than all the mouthful of stuff I just said, I think it's really true. And again, I think it comes down to focusing on really how can we serve people better? Because at the end of the day, all of our customers are our bosses. And I think that's something that even like you mentioned, one of the things I really appreciate that you shared is your willingness to turn away clients, that you're looking at the fundamentals of the business. Because there's just things that you're like, I can't fix this. You want me to do a marketing campaign about your product being better in this way, but there's no proof. You're just saying
it. Exactly. So that part, so sometimes the clients get a bit surprised. Because it's almost like I'm consultant by nature. So there's this genuine need. And of course, I'm the curiosity as well. And I would always try to rip apart all these nice parts of the business. And I really want to go down to the roots of it. Right? I've been doing this for years. I've gone through company accounts. One moment in front of my face, they say, oh yeah, we're doing so well. We're turning over 10 million a year. But didn't add in the point. didn't add in the point that we're also, but we've lost also 5 million. So then you start to ask questions, where did this money go? And they were, hey, but you're doing a creative work for us. Why are you so bothered? But I said, but to change and to understand, I need to know what your business is about. And that's so crucial because we, in my career as well, we've done transformation, we've done restructuring as well. So people think a creative guy with that kind of experience, it's important because you can't be creative without knowing fully what the business is doing. Or else you'll just be taking whatever you're hearing at face value and then just marketing that. Then I think that's doing the company a great... Because through understanding the business, you might discover some other point of a different positioning that they might have. And that's only through understanding completely what they do and how they function.
I love that. It's not... some people are like, just make some posts. That's not how this works.
Yeah, I don't work like that. It's just not us.
I love that. What are some of the trends that you're paying attention to that are coming down the pipeline that you think entrepreneurs should be aware of and on top of over the next 5 years, 10 years?
I think in terms of the trends, it's tough because what counts as a trend to you would also depend on what kind of resources that you have. So I know everyone, the whole big buzzword about AI, blah, 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 and all that. That's going to be, of course, you're going to be using that as more and more as part of your work. But I feel that, yes, all these tools are in, all this stuff are in. But the trend that I think that people should go back a little bit towards is actually going back to basics a little bit. Because all these tools are going to be AI tools and all that. They're all just going to be the great equalizer of things. Then eventually everyone's going to be the same. Everyone's going to be churning out the same BS every single day. And that's what, right, on LinkedIn, for example, I read so many posts. I say, they all sound alike, but they're all different people. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's important not to jump on the bandwagon of any particular thing. Like for the way that we do stuff and how we are planning our marketing ahead is that we are employing the usage of new tools, but at the same time, backtracking to see what was great before. Why was it great before? Before it got twisted around by all this thing. Because don't forget, all these companies that are offering you these tools, they're out to make money from you. Of course, they want you to think that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I'm not the kind, I will look at trends. Yeah, sure, we'll see what's happening. But to really say, that's going to be the next big thing, it's hard to say because everything is changing so quickly. But what I would say is look at the trends of the past because it could open actually the doors, a few doors in the future. That's what I feel.
I think that's such a fantastic answer. Go through the history of your industry and of whatever and focus on that and take it. History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So there is a cyclical kind of heartbeat to things. So I feel that some people talk about AI replacing stuff. And I go, what happened when calculators first came out? Before we used to have to do that. And you would have staff that's what they did was math, but now you have a calculator and a spreadsheet and you don't need them anymore. And the calculators got rid of the excuses of the bookkeepers taking 5 days to do 2 + 2 = 4. And the productive ones became more productive and the non-productive ones had to go find their ikigai and go do something different. This is anything too different.
I think it's the thing also, right? All your Bitcoin and stuff like that. Oh, that was such a big trend. Now it's still, but everyone's starting to jump on the bandwagon. Everyone wants to create their own token of some sort. There was another one. And I'm so glad that this project never happened, because when I looked at the entire business model, I'm like, you got to be flipping kidding me. This sounds like scam all over it. And after all the collapse of all the token exchanges and stuff like that, and you want to come out now and then, and I say, right now it's 2023, your product got launched in 2018 and you're still trying to say that you're the new kid on the block. I said, not in tech terms, you're not, right? Yeah. And so this company wanted to do their own currency backed by gold, for example. And so my question was like, yeah, so where's this gold? It's in some mine in some part of Africa. I'm like, okay, so has anyone confirmed where that gold is and if that gold is really there? No, but we think it's there. I said, then, I'm out of this conversation altogether. I'm out. There's no way I'm going to be involved with this marketing.
And that's a huge opportunity for other people, is being able to go over the hill to get the result first.
Yeah.
If they went and they had the mine and they said, look, we've pulled up just a couple kilos. We found 10 kilos, 10 keys of gold at this mine. And we think there's going to be another 100+ keys. Well, now you can launch your coin and they're backed by something. But so many people are living in the dream and fantasy land. But at the end of the day, you got to produce a result. Businesses were built on, my kids need to be fed. We need a spear that will stab the bandits that are coming to attack us. My horse needs a shoe so it can walk and not get stuff stuck in its feet and have to stop every 10 minutes to pick it out. Like real results. Right. And now we live in this so much luxury that people live in, and they're mentally masturbating all day in this world of this. You see these shows like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank, and people come on, they're like, my idea is worth $1 million. Okay, well, how much are you doing in sales? My mom bought one. It's like, bro, like there's no... It's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. And I really love that about what you've said, like getting into the roots, the reality.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, we've got so much stuff, right? Augmented reality and all these kind of things. But all these things are not really reality. That's the irony of it. So from all this... I think... Sometimes, and I've said this also to a few clients, sometimes you just got to take a few steps back, and people need to see, feel, and experience. And no amount of, you could generate the most beautiful videos and things like that. And I posted something on LinkedIn the other day. It's like using all these AI tools to enhance how you look. And I said, better be careful about how you do that, because if you one day go missing, right, no one's going to believe that it's you, right? That's the... We should just keep it real. And I think, and we should sound like how we sound. Of course, about ChatGPT and everything might be great, but everyone sounds the same. Even if they do edit the thing a little bit, they all still sound the same. I refuse to use that to dictate any of my posts, for example, right? But I think instead of making you stand out as an individual, it's making everyone uniform. And that's why I said all these trends are just the great equalizer of everyone. Yeah, you don't have to be a doctor to sound like a doctor anymore and stuff like that.
And we have to be careful that we are the ones using the tool. We don't become... Somebody said this. In the world of Ubers, do you want to be the one programming Uber or the one that gets programmed by Uber?
Right.
Amazon delivery. There's nothing. We need everybody. So
exactly.
I'm not trying to throw shade on anyone. Like, we need all levels of society, all types. Mm-hmm. I need someone to come pick up my garbage. This is all valuable stuff. But you get to choose. We're talking about people wanting to live in a VR reality. This is, life is like a video game. It's like a role-playing game. We all know how it works. You start off as a small kid and you have to go build up your strength and your stamina. You have to go collect precious items that give you enhanced abilities. You have to learn, just because you have an expert level tool, you might not be ready to use it yet. Doesn't mean you know how to use it expertly. And we live in a world where you get to level up your character. You get to go and become the person you want to become. And plugging into a video game is just trying to avoid the hard work of actually doing the thing that needs to be done. I think that if you can do the things that actually need to be done to produce a real world result, we live in a physical world. Like, you need physical food. They've never been able to send astronauts to space and give them just goop. Like, they actually still need food that came from the ground or was a living thing that ate things from the ground and then got killed and then
cooked, exactly,
put in a bag. They haven't been able to just, here's a handful of pills and now you don't need to eat. Like, it's all just going a long way around the barn on some of this stuff. And I
think
these interviews had a lot of really good whack upside that had common sense.
It is. It's common sense. Common sense. And I think that's being lost today. That's really being lost.
Yeah, I love that. Well, if people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, if they want to follow you and hear more about what you got to say, where should they go?
You can follow me on my LinkedIn. You can follow. I think you can provide the LinkedIn address somehow.
Sure.
LinkedIn is where I'm most active right now, but we are waiting to launch the whole bunch of videos on TikTok as well. And once you follow me on LinkedIn, I'm sure you'll be able to get the updates for that as well.
Sure. So go find him, Jonathan, Big John Francis, J-O-H-N-A-T-H-A-N, Big John Francis, F-R-A-N-C-I-S. You know it's him if he went to the University of Roehampton and is in Malaysia. John, thank you so much for joining and sharing with us today. Is there anything I didn't ask you or I should have asked you?
Nope. I think there was a part about a quote.
Sure. What, you got a quote?
Yes. So I love Salvador Dali. It's my favorite artist, and I love him because he's wacky, he's mad, and I embrace that madness. So there's a particular quote, and it says, "Intelligence without ambition is a bird without wings."
Oh, I love that. What a great quote. John, thank you for coming and sharing with my audience.
Thank you so much, Daryl.
Your own audience, your own staff. Everyone listening, go check him out on LinkedIn. Jonathan, Big John Francis. John, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us all. I really appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate yours. Thank you.